And you know, me with my great hopes, like I even think we may be able to finish Ezra and go into Sefer Nehemiah.
And what
about this? Oh, that's all part of it. You think I've forgotten that? Ah, I don't forget. Maybe it's important to point out, and Rashi is going to say it at the very beginning of Nehemiah, that Nehemiah wrote this part of Sefer Ezra. I don't know if we ever pointed it out that in according to the Masorah, there are 24 Kitvei HaKodesh, 24 books of the Tanakh. If Ezra and Nehemiah would be considered two separate Sfarim, there would be 25. According to our counting of the Sfarim, Ezra and Nehemiah, all one Sefer. The only difference between Ezra and Nehemiah is, as Rashi points out, and we'll see at the very beginning of Nehemiah, that from that point on and further, Nehemiah wrote it. But he wrote, that means the second part of Sefer Ezra. And we have already talked in the past about the fact that chapter divisions were, their origin is from the Christian world. There are no chapter divisions in the Masorah. A Shmuel Aleph and a Shmuel Bet, and a Malachim Aleph and a Malachim Bet, and a Divrei Ayavim Aleph and a Divrei Ayavim Bet. This is a Christian division of the Sfarim. In the Masorah we have Shmuel, Malachim, Divrei Ayavim, and we have Ezra, not Ezra and Nehemiah. So therefore, I don't even want to leave the impression as though, though I've left the impression, so I have to correct it, that we're finishing Sefer Ezra and we're beginning Sefer Nehemiah. We're not doing that. We are continuing in Sefer Ezra that part that is written by Nehemiah. And what is fascinating, very often, in my youth, I remember coming across different places where Rashi in the Gemara will say about a pasuk, it is in Sefer Ezra. And then on the side of the Gemara, they would tell you to look up Nehemiah chapter 5. And Rashi always says it's Sefer Ezra. Because Rashi did not recognize any divisions between Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. Simply didn't recognize. There are no two Svarim, Ezra and Nehemiah. And please don't ask me the question that people always ask me when I make these comments. So how do our Tanakhs separate Ezra and Nehemiah? I get you all excited about something that I don't have. It means there simply was a profound influence of the Christian world. Tremendously profound influence. That's all. What can we do? Alright. Last chapter. We were up to Pasuk 8 in the last chapter. And what's being described over here is a very profound and powerful experience that's taking place in the Beit HaMikdash. Ezra has been told that there are Jews who have married foreign women. Intermarriage has taken place. Ezra responds the way a Jew is supposed to respond. He tears his garments, he doesn't eat, he doesn't drink, he prostrates himself before God in the Beit HaMikdash, and as he continues to pray, the word goes out that Ezra is all broken up about what is happening in Klal Yisrael, and people begin to join him. In the first pasuk in chapter 10, Ukihit Halel Ezra, Ukihit Vardoto, and as Ezra prayed and he confessed. Bochel mitnapel, he's crying and he's falling before God, before the house of God. Nigbitz ve'elav Yisrael, all of Israel begin to join him. Kohol rav miyod, a very great number of people, anoshim ve'noshim ve'yiladim, men, women and children, ki bochu ha'om harbe becha, because the people, it was a terrible, terrible crying. And then, in the next pasuk, we get back to our pasuk right away. Shechaniah is the one who says, yes, we have sinned a terrible sin. Now, of all things, I noticed something, I don't know why I hadn't noticed it before, but it's a sentence in the Malbim. And The Dat Mikra Tanakh seems to take a different position, and you will immediately see that the position that I take is with the Malbim. The Dat Mikra at the end of this chapter says the following. In this chapter, we're going to have a listing of people who married out of the faith. Now, I could have said that sentence in two ways. I was careful because I could have said a listing of the people who married out of the faith. But what I said was a listing of people who married out of the faith. And these two sentences represent two different approaches. According to the Dat Mikra, the listing in this chapter is a listing of people who married out of the faith. The Dat Mikra says the following. When we're going to check through the number of people who are listed here, from the four families of Kohanim, there were 17 people who married out of the faith. From the Leviim and the singers in the Beit HaMikdash and the gatekeepers, there were 10 people who married out of the faith. From 10 families in Israel, there were 86 people who married out of the faith. 86, 96, how much is 96 and 17? 113. Besach a sum total of Mea Ushlosha Asar Kvarim. A total of 113 men who married out of the faith are going to be mentioned in this chapter in Ezra. And they say, this is how Dat Mikra goes on to say, and this is from a community that numbered tens of thousands of people. And earlier, yes, that's what it seems, that men married out of the faith and not women. Hanoshim Tzidkaniyot say. Men, especially men of high station and high position, have all sorts of hang-ups and problems and opportunities. Yeah. Now, the conclusion, now watch what the Dat Mikra is going to say. Dat Mikra is going to say, since in Pasuk 3 of this chapter, in the third Pasuk of the chapter, what did it say? It said in the third Pasuk, Anachnu ma'alnu ba'Hashem Elokeinu, we have sinned, like we've all sinned. In Pasuk 13 of this chapter, it says, Aval ha'om rav, the people who gathered together with Ezra in the Beit HaMikdash, large number of people, v'ha'ed gishamim, we're going to have a description of a cold, rainy day in Yerushalayim. It's a time of rain. Ve'in karach lamod bachutz, they didn't have the strength to stand outdoors. Where were they standing? They were standing in the courtyards of the Beit HaMikdash. V'hamalocha lo liyom echad, the work of separating men from their foreign wives was not a job for one day, v'lo lishnayim, and not for two. Ki hir, it's going to take a while. Ki hir binu lishoa b'dover hazeh, because we have rebelled greatly in this matter. So the Dat Mikra takes it to mean a lot of people married out of the faith. Now 113 does not strike them as having been a large number of people. I'm just reading what they say. Ula'el nema, earlier it says, ki hirbu lishoa b'dover hazeh, that there was a great deal of rebelliousness against God in this matter. Nimtzeinu lemeidim, so they say, therefore we learn from this, shelo olod b'yidei Ezra lahotzi et machshavto lepoel b'shleimut. From here we see that Ezra did not succeed in completely eradicating this plague in Israel. He didn't correct it all. Nehemiah is going to come and going to complete the job. Because how do they understand it? When it says that a lot of people, and we sinned greatly, it must mean more than 113. Alright? That's one approach. That would be the approach of saying that in this chapter, they listed people who married out of the faith. I'm only bringing this as an introduction to one sentence in the Malbim on this chapter. And as I said, I'm surprised that I hadn't seen this Malbim before. The Malbim says, we have sinned greatly. Says the Malbim, Hinei lefi masha chashav achar kach, according to the calculation later, of shmot ha'anashim shenasu nashim nachriyot, according to the calculation and the list of the men who married foreign women, hayu ma'atim le'erech ha'am, in comparison as a to the number of people, it was a small number, 113. And 113 is not, 60 or 70% of the people. It was a small number. Le'erech ha'am harav, in comparison to the number of people, shahayu ato be'eretz Yisrael, that were now at that time in Eretz Yisrael. Because then, despite that, even though there were a small number of people, the sin was a general sin of all of Israel. First of all, because it was done befahesia, it was done in public, and you know that a guy down the block has married a non-Jewish woman. Furthermore, v'hasorim lo michu badavar, the officers of Israel didn't stand up and object. It was passed over in silence. As it says, the pasuk says, V'yad hasarim v'haskanim hayo b'mal hazed ishona. The officers and the governors, they were part of this sin. Now when it says, when they were in the first part of this sin, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that the Gedolei Yisrael were marrying out of the faith. By their silence meant acquiescence. I don't know if the women are learning Daf Yomi, but if the men are learning Daf Yomi, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there was a whole two blot in the Gemara where the Gemara in Shabbos talks about the fact that the sins of the great of Israel. Gemara goes, Kol ha'omer Shlomo chata eina ela toa. Whoever says that Shlomo sinned is making a terrible mistake, our rabbi said. It says about Shlomo that he built altars to Chemosh, the god of Moab, this the deity of Tzidon, the deity of Mitzrayim. It says Oz Yivne Shlomo built all sorts of altars to all sorts of foreign gods. How can you tell me that whoever says Shlomo sinned is only making a mistake? Says the Gemara, of course he didn't do it. But it was done by his wife, Aval Bishvil Shalom Macha, because he didn't object, so it's considered as though he sinned. And so the Gemara goes on about, in a number of other cases where it says about people who sinned as though terrible, terrible sins, what the way we look at it, since Jews are responsible one for another, if there's something that I can object about, though, but you have to be in a position to object, and that your objection should be heard. If leadership remains silent when something terrible is taking place, then the guilt is certainly a great part of the guilt is going to be laid at the doorstep of the great. That's what the Malbim is saying over here. When it says that the officers and the governors were the first in this sin, it doesn't mean that they married out of the faith, but that they remained silent. They didn't object. Therefore, this sin was considered as a sin that was committed by the entire people. So what is the Malbim? How is the Malbim learning shot? That the list that we're going to have in chapter 10 of Ezra is a list of the people who married out of the faith. 113 total. It's not the way Darth Mikra sees it. You know, of course, from all that you've heard from me, so you know, of course, that I side with the in the Malbim, with the Malbim. There were no more than 113. But we're talking about 113 people who didn't hide the fact that they had married out of the faith. And Gedolei Yisrael didn't object. Yes, go ahead. You mean after Ezra?
They can't remember that there were laws for part of
another one, I'll help you out. Number one, and this is a shear that goes back I don't know how many years. Gimme, marrying more than one wife, was never the common practice by the Jewish people. It may come as a surprise to you, but I'm telling you, trust me. And in addition to saying trust me, I will also briefly prove it. Marrying more than one wife throughout all of Jewish history was the exception rather than the rule. The proof, number one, if we take the entire period of the Talmud, there are so many stories about rabbis and their wives. In other words, each rabbi and his own wife. In all of Talmud, and there are 2,000 rabbis of the Talmud, not a single one had more than one wife. Do you understand? 2,000 people. And we knew that Bruria was the wife of Rab Meir, and Lilt, I think, was the wife of Rab Huna or Rab Nech. Everybody had one wife. In Tanakh, the period of Tanakh, everybody had one wife, except those who are listed otherwise. Which means, Avraham, yes. Yitzchak, no. Yaakov, yes. For good reason. Alright? Okay? Moshe, one. Aaron, one. Go ahead. Take anybody in the generation of the desert. All one wife. Go through all of Tanakh. So you know who had more than one wife? Kings, and not all of the kings. Of the kings, David and Shlomo, Shaul had one wife. And her name is mentioned. What's her name? Avinoam? He had one wife. Elkanah had two wives. And we understand why he had two wives. He had married Hannah, who had no children, so he married Peninnah. It was the exception. Which therefore means, when we talk about 1,100 years ago, Rabbeinu Gershom, the light of the exile, promulgated a law of one wife, no bigamy. So we usually have this picture in our minds as though in every house in Israel, do you know what's going on? It was Tisha B'Av. Guy had to decide, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know what I'm saying? Which wife is he going to keep and which five or six is he going to send away? It wasn't so. All that Rabbeinu Gershom did is that which was already the accepted practice by Israel for thousands of years. He gave it the force of law. No more than that. There was never, never, ever any kind of mass bigamy by the Jewish people. Permitted, yes, but never practiced. Never, ever practiced. Yes. Ah. Okay, Teimanim. All right, okay. Teimanim. I don't know, I know Teimanim that I had a feeling, first of all, there also, you will see, it was not common practice. Only somebody who had, who was quite wealthy and was able to support more than one wife. And in a sense, I'm only theorizing. I'm not this. I really don't know. I think it was part of a social influence of the countries in which they lived where this was acceptable. So if it is acceptable in the countries in which they live, and according to halacha, it's not prohibited, so they may have practiced it, but also not in great measure. By the way, the Rabbanut, over here, I think it was in the early 50s, the Rabbanut made it clear that anybody who comes to this country from thenceforth and forward cannot marry more than... if they have a wife, they can't marry another wife. But just, I think it's very important from time to time just to clarify, it's an idea that most people think that throughout Jewish history, everybody had more than one. It's not so. And even Shlomo HaMelech, who had many wives, his wives were alliances and mergers. It was in a sense to solidify relationships with different nations. But bigamy was never, never the common practice by Klal Yisrael. Never. Moshe had one wife. Aaron had one wife. Kalei ben Yefuneh had one wife. Never occurred. Korach had one wife. Dathan and Abiram each had one wife. So therefore, intermarriage could never have been the result of, well, you know, since, all right, I have already, I mean, two, three Jewish princesses, about time to get a shiksa. Never worked that way. Never worked that way. The intermarriage was obviously the result of galut influences, because I don't know what was going on in the exile. It most probably started there, and as as is true until today, the problems of chutz laretz are brought to Eretz Yisrael, though Eretz Yisrael doesn't need those problems, but they are brought from chutz laretz. It's an import that wasn't necessary. I think I pointed out once that Rambam described the Jews who came back from the exile, and Jews in the exile already had lost a tremendous amount of their intense Yiddishkeit. So therefore, it was already beginning. But Ezra and Nehemiah put an end to it. It's not going to raise its ugly head again. Certainly not until this century. And certainly there was never a time in Jewish history, never a time in Jewish history, that there was intermarriage on the scale that we're talking about today. When the scale that we're talking about today is obviously a self-destruct of the Jewish people. God, unfortunately, that's what's really happening before our very eyes. Self-destruct. Under rabbinic supervision, no less. And I don't mean Orthodox rabbis. Under rabbinic supervision. Rabbis are performing these marriages. Rabbis are performing these marriages together with priests. Rabbis' children are marrying out of the faith, and rabbis and priests are officiating it. I think that, you know what they should do over here in this country? What they should do is, every Monday, the Jerusalem Post shouldn't have the News of the Week of review in the New York Times. They should have the marriage announcements of the New York Times on Sunday, print that on Monday, and they throw the bums out of the country. Any Sunday in the New York Times, read the marriage announcements. Oh, ever now a drush I gave West Hampstead. Didn't usually buy the New York Times. It was too formidable and too frightening. And especially since, I mean, to bring in a psazar. And too heavy. Too heavy. It was heavy physically, it was heavy emotionally. I just remember one Sunday morning that I happened to see the Times, and there was a marriage announcement about, I don't remember, I have it in one of my drasha books. I pasted it in over there because the sermon was on that. A great granddaughter of Rabbi Wise, one of the founders of Reform movement in America, got married in the Little Church of the West, someplace, I think it was in Phoenix or one of those places, and they listed the whole family tree. In other words, like L'Havdil by a Chusid, you have Chassid Shevet, Ben Acha Ben from the Mezericha Magid. They had a listing over there, families, all the way straight back to Rabbi Isaac Meir Weiss, who brought the Reform movement to America. And this was, what, when was I in West Hampstead? 20 years ago? I mean, I was there, I left 16 years ago. But I think this drasha was in the middle of the time that I was there. So I said that marriage announcement was not a marriage announcement. It was a death notice. It was an announcement of the death of the Reform movement. That the founder of the Reform movement in the United States of America was Zeicher, that his great-granddaughter got married in the Little Church of the West. To some guy, I don't know, Christopher Agastopoulos, I mean, a real Goyish Greek name. Alright, so therefore, we got... we move from one to the next, but main point is, intermarriage was never the result of the fact that Torah permits bigamy. Bigamy was never practiced en masse by Jewish people, and we've given the proof. you know, just so that you shouldn't be able to come back at me one of these days and say that this statement that you made was not a correct statement. I said that 2,000 rabbis, Tanaim and Amoraim, 2,000 rabbis, and they all had only one wife. There is one Gemara. One Gemara that you may come back at me. And I remember when I learned this Gemara, I was a young boy and I didn't understand the Gemara. The Gemara said that when Rav visited a city called Shachantziv, he asked, Man hava lon liyoma. What woman are we going to have for today? Don't think in presidential terms, please. The Gemara says that Rav asked, when he came to the city of Shachantziv, he asked, Man hava lon liyoma. Who will we have for today? I was a young boy, innocent, and I just didn't understand the Gemara. So I remember, I don't know how, where I got the guts. I'm talking with my Rosh Hashim, and I asked him, what's Pshat? Say, tells me. I don't know if I should say all of this, but I'll say. He says, after you get married, come back and ask me, and I'll tell you Pshat in the Gemara. After I got married, after being in the yeshiva, I said, hey, Hashiva, what's the pshat in that Gemara? So I'll tell you exactly the answer that he gave. He says, and then I found it afterwards, I found it in the safe. I found it in the safe by Rabbi Reuven Margolius, who was a Adam God lives, he was the head librarian in Tel Aviv, a man not only who was librarian of the Tel Aviv library, he knew everything that was in every book in the Tel Aviv library. He was amazing. So he says, Rav had to travel from time to time on behalf of the Jewish people. When he would be visiting different potentates or important people, the minhag was that they would bring a woman. You talking about he's away from home? And I remember the Shiva telling me, listen, we knew, this is in the 50s, he's telling me, we knew this was going on in the White House in the days of Roosevelt. This is middle 50s, you understand, not late 90s. And he says that he even remembers that there was a small item someplace in the New York Times back in the 40s that Nehru was visiting Washington, and they also provided him with a woman, and he was the only one who ever refused, of heads of state. Little item tucked away. Rav, when he was traveling on behalf of the Jewish people, didn't want to be put in that position of having to say no thank you. So they created for him, wherever he went, some kind of a phony marriage. Oh, I got my wife with me. Man have a lonely yoma. Who's the one that will be my wife for today? That's what Rav was doing. So he should never fall into that trap. So that I just wanted to make sure that if ever you'll come across that Gemara and you can never assume what women will find out one of these days or not. You shouldn't be able to tell me that 1,999 of Chachmei Yisrael, I was right, only had one wife, but Rav had more than one wife. So I'm telling you, didn't have more than one wife. All right, I got through that. I don't know why I walked into it, but I got through it. But then I found the taka in a sefer, and there happens to be another Gemara about this place, Shachantziv. Shachantziv was a city of scoffers. In a sense, Leitzim, these were people who were always looking to find something dirty about others. I mean, there may be a lot of cities that way today, but Shachantziv, when Rav went to Shachantziv, he wanted to make certain that he was going to be clean and pure and not fall into the mouth of anybody in the city of Shachantziv. Two shittas, two approaches. Das Mikra's approach is 113 people who married out of the faith are listed here. Malbim says the 113 who married out of the faith are listed here. All right. I still owe you one thing, but I'm only going to give you that one thing when we have officially finish this part of Sefer Ezra. We were up to Pasuk Chet. They let it be known throughout, in chapter 10, they let it be known throughout the Jewish community, the Cholash, that everybody is supposed to come to Yerushalayim, gather in Yerushalayim, and they're going to deal with the issue of intermarriage. The Cholash lo yavo l'shloshet hayamim, have 3 days. And anybody who doesn't come within 3 days, katzas, hasarim v'hazakenim, as was the advice of the officers and the elders, anybody who doesn't come, yacharam kol rechusho, all of his possessions will be forfeited. And that's really the shiur today was supposed to be on this, the concept, the idea in halacha of hefker bezdin hefker. And I want to list, I hope we'll have time, and I'll list for you where this halacha comes into play. It is a halacha that appears throughout Shas. There are many examples of where Bezdin has the right to forfeit somebody's money, and according to one opinion in the Gemara, we learn it from this pasuk in Ezra. This pasuk in Ezra is a pillar of Jewish law. And we'll talk about it. Yes. They are called B'nai HaGolah throughout this Sefer. Those who came, Hashavim B'HaGolah, B'nai HaGolah, that's what he refers to them throughout the Sefer. He's never called them Israelis once. They're all called B'nai HaGolah. V'hu yivadel mikahal HaGolah, v'yikavtsu kol anshei Yehuda u'binyamin Yerushalayim l'shloshes hayamim. Now do you understand the power of Ezra? They all came. They all came. All of Israel gathered. V'yikavtsu kol anshei Yehuda u'binyamin Yerushalayim, the people of Yehuda u'binyamin gathered in Yerushalayim l'shloshes hayamim at the end of the third day. V'hu chodesh hachi be'esr b'chodesh. It was the ninth month, it was Tevet, the 20th of Tevet. Vayeshu kol ha'om v'rechov beit olakim, all of the people sat down in the courtyard that is before the house of God. Man'idim al hadover u'mei ha'gishamim, they were trembling. First and foremost because of what it is that had brought them together, the matter that had brought them together, u'mei ha'gishamim, and it was raining. I think it's terribly important that the pasuk tells us that the main reason for their trembling is the fact that there's intermarriage by Klal Yisrael. But listen, he's telling us also it was rain. It was Tevet. Vayakom Ezra HaKohen, Vayomer Aleihem, Ezra HaKohen got up and he said to them, Atem Be'altem, you have sinned, Vatoshivu Noshim Nochriyeth, you've have living with you Noshim, women that are foreign. Lahusif al Ashmat Yisrael, that adds to the sins of Israel. Now the word todah here does not mean thanks. The word todah here comes from the word vidui, confess. Before God, the God of your fathers, vasuritzono, do his will, vihi bodlu me'amei oetz, and separate yourself from the people of the land, umin anoshim hanokriyot, and from the women, the foreign women. Vayanu kol hakol, vayanu kol gadol, the entire congregation answered in a great voice, Cain, kidvorecho aleinu la'asot. Yes, as you have said, this is our responsibility to do. Avol ha'om rav, but they told him, listen, there's a lot of people here for ha'ev kishamim, and the time is a time of rain. Ve'in koach lamot b'chutz, we don't have the strength to stand outdoors. V'hamalocha lo liyom echad v'lo lishnayim, and this is a job that's not going to be done in one day or in two, ki hirbinu l'fshoa b'adav hazeh, because we have sinned greatly in this matter. So therefore they suggest a commission. Yamdu nasareinu lechol hakohol, let there be established officers from the entire community. Lechol asher ba'areinu, and they should find out all of those in our cities, ha'hoshiv nashim nochriyot, those who have brought into their homes foreign wives, yavoli itimizumanim, they should come at times that they are invited to come. V'imayim ziknei ir v'ir v'shofteh, with them will come the elders of each city and their judges. Ad lahashiv karon af elokeinu mimenu, until we will be able to turn away the anger of God from us. Ad ladavar, as until this thing is completely finished. By the way, you may notice that the structure of sentences or the syntax is not precisely the way it is in Torah. It is different. They did indeed speak a Hebrew that was in a sense different than biblical Hebrew, just as I don't know, I imagine if Ezra would hear them knocking away in Ivrit today, it would be, even without the non-Hebraic words in it, it's a different Hebrew. It's a different Hebrew. There's all sorts of conjugations that are used today. I mean, yesterday I started hearing and seeing ads in the paper about experts on miklut. Do you know what an expert on miklut is? From the, that's right, it's from the word miklat. I never heard miklat conjugated as miklut. Miklutati, hiklatati. Oh no, that's taping. All right. Miklut. There are all sorts of words that are used that are simply, were not part of the language. Here it's sentence structure that is a shtickl different. Ach, let's go. Ach, Yonatan ben Asael ve Yachazia ben Tikva amdu al zot. Yonatan ben Asael and Yachazia ben Tikva, they were appointed to do this. Amdu al zot. Umishulam v'shaptai ha-Levi azorun, and Mishulam and Shaptai, the Levi, are the ones who assisted them. There are two pshatim. Sudas David says, "Amd valzot hidchasku biyoter al hadavarahi lahavdil hamashim hakol." Sudas David says they were strong about this to make sure that the nashim, the women, are going to be removed. Rashi says, "Amd valzot lekanter al hadavarazeh." Your translation is correct. I mean, it's Rashi. Rashi says that they, lekanter means they came to make trouble. They objected to it. So you have, there you have two pshatim. Let's see if the, you see, I'll tell you, so you want to know, you most probably want to know, why didn't I say the pshat of Rashi, right? So I'll tell you why. Because if you take a look in Pasuk Yud Dalet, when they appoint them, what's the first word in Pasuk Yud Dalet that's talking about appointing the people who are going to be in charge? Yanduna. So I would assume that when it says Amdu al Zeh, the only thing is, I tremble, not only because of the matter and because of the rain, but Rashi. When Rashi says something, you simply have to tremble. I could get out of it a little bit. There are opinions that say that Rashi on Ezra is not Rashi. It was written by somebody else. You know, I'm sort of safe on all sides. And I don't see the Malbim doesn't say anything. But then it does. The Malbim says, the Malbim says that the people in this Pasuk were the only ones who are opposed to the commission Kriz of Rashi. I bend and bow.
The Shulam, who was one of the people opposite, gave up his life.
Good, yeah. But at this point, he's opposed to the whole, to this whole commission to end intermarriage. Let's go, Viker. Vayasu came B'nai HaGola. B'nai HaGola did this. You see, B'nai HaGola, they're referred to as B'nai HaGola. In other words, all of the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael are considered B'nai HaGola. Vayibadlu Ezra HaKoyin Anoshim Rashi Ha'avot Lebeit Avotam V'kulam B'Shemot. They separated them. They separated the women, the foreign women, from their husbands. Who were the people that did the separation? Ezra HaKoyin. Don't read the pasuk as though Ezra separated himself from his wife who was not Jewish. They separated them from their wives. Who were the ones that did it? Ezra HaKoyin and people who were the heads of the families, and all of them are known by their names. Vayeshu b'yom echot l'chodesh ha'asidi. Here again we're going to come up against a strange conjugation of a word. Vayeshu, they sat down. In other words, the commission began its proceedings on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Rosh Chodesh Shvat. The fact is, I was trying to get to this pasuk last week. You know, Simon, you know. Even though it was the day after Rosh Chodesh, you like the Simanim, I was trying, but I failed. They started, the commission started on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, L'Daryosh HaDavar. You know what L'Daryosh HaDavar means? We would in Hebrew say L'Drosh HaDavar, to seek it out and to investigate. As Rashi says, I'm going to use Rashi, Kemo L'Drosh. V'yichalu b'kol, and they finished it all. Now, you see, when I see the word V'yichalu b'kol, I have the feeling that yes, Rashi is saying it, and as the Malbim said, this is the list of the sum total of people who married out of the faith. They finished it all. What did they finish? The Anoshim HaHoshivu, also a strange form of the word. The men who had brought in Noshim Nochriot, Adyom Echot LaChodesh HaRisham. It took 2 months until the first day of the month of Nisan. Vayimotzei Mibnei HaKohanim, and now begins the list. So just as there are lists both in Ezra and Nehemiah of the families that came on Aliyah as a sign of recognition and honor for all generations, there is the list of people who have married out of the faith. From amongst the Kohanim who had married far estranged women, Mibnei Yeshua ben Tzodak ve'echov Maseh. I don't know, should we... Is there any point in reading the... No, there is no point in reading the whole list. So wait a minute. So therefore, the last pasuk in Ezra, last pasuk in the chapter, Kol Eilef. Again, this seems to be like the Malbin. All of these married Noshim Nochriot, V'yesh mehem Noshim V'yosimu Banim. There were some who not only had wives, but they also made children. Is that a strange way to... In other words, there were those who had married out of the faith, but they didn't have children from the wives, didn't have children yet from the wives who they had married out of the faith. Which might be, by the way, this pasuk might be an indication that they nipped the problem in the bud. Even when it finally gets to Ezra, it's not as though this is something that has been going on for years now. Because the pasuk says some of them already had children, which means most of them had not yet had children. It might be an indication, I theorize, that the problem may have been, I don't know, 2-3 years, and that when Ezra comes, he finds out about it, and he sort of stops the problem right in its path. She had her hand up first. Go ahead. I like the way she asks the question, you know, like, they have no... See, you have to understand the following. They most probably did have an opportunity to convert. And the fact is, Rambam says, for example, he writes about two people, two of the great, Shimshon and Shlomo. The Rambam says, don't for a moment think that they married women who were not Jewish. When it talks about Delilah from Plishtim, and I mean, he had three women over there who were from Plishtim. Says all of them were converted. Shimshon didn't live with a woman who hadn't gone through the process of conversion. Shlomo HaMelech with all his wives from Bas Paro and further, God forbid even to think that they had done anything of the sort. Klar, no doubt about it, they all went through the process of conversion. Would there have been a process of would they have converted? This would not have been there would have been no tragedy over here. On the contrary, there was conversion. Das Moshe Yisroel, so it's a Yiddish Meidel. That's all. I can't see any reason why they shouldn't have had the opportunity to convert. In halacha, of all things, there was only one period during which conversions would not be accepted by Beis Din. And this is going to shake you a little bit, in the days of David and Shlomo. And therefore the Rambam says, at the times of Mashiach. In other words, when the Jewish people are the darlings of the world, then Beis Din is very careful about conversions. Because then there's the ulterior motive. Listen, the Jews are riding high, and therefore they want to convert. The convert is the one who's told, don't you know that Jews suffer? The last thing, the Rambam says, the last thing that you tell a convert. Once gave a shear of that. It may very well be the Erev Rav. That's why by the Egel, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu in heaven, Leich they go down to Shichei's Amcha, because your people have acted badly. And Rashi over there says, this is the Erev Rav that you took out with you. I didn't tell you to take them out. Now the Rambam says that in the final meeting that a Beis Din has with the prospective convert, you're supposed to say to the convert, don't you know that Jews suffer today, they're persecuted, they're hated, and they're hunted. Why in heaven's name do you want to become part of this people? If the convert answers, yes, I know that that's true, and I'm unworthy to be part of that great people, Mekablin otel miyad, to accept him immediately. Because that means that he is ready not only to share in the glory of the Jewish people, but he's ready, he or she are ready to share in the suffering, the pain, the travail of the Jewish people. So therefore, in the days of David and Shlomo, and the Rambam points this out, therefore the women in those days, everybody wanted, it was to be Jewish, it was in to be Jewish. Because there was great prosperity and great peace in the days of, the end of the days of David and the days of Shlomo. So therefore, indeed, therefore, the Rambam has to say that that the women that Shlomo HaMelech married had to go through this, you know, their process of conversion, while it was,
if this would have been for a commoner, it would have been good only b'dieved, only after it was done. But Shlomo, because he was doing it for the best interest of Klal Yisrael, so it was permitted. And also in the days of Mashiach, everybody's going to get on the bandwagon. Everybody's going to want, everybody's going to be Jewish. So I must say that they had opportunity to convert, and the fact that their husbands did not convert them was the tragedy. That was a tragedy. Yes?
What about in the days of Moshe?
Oh, I was thinking of that pasuk as I was talking, because the pasuk in the Megillah says, after the Mordechai rises to power, V'rabin me'amei ha'aretz mityahadim kinofal pachad Mordechai ha'yehudi aleihem, and many Jews, many goyim mityahadim became Jewish because the fear of Mordechai was upon them. So I don't know whether it means that they wanted to become Jews, or you know, there may even have been quickie conversions that were going on for a price. Did anything ever become of those goyim? I don't know. But yes, it's an indication that yes, that they wanted to become part of the Jewish people is proof, clear proof that Mordechai had achieved greatness. Yes?
Why
is
it
kind of
unusual that in a list of people who marry...
Oh. How many have you? Have one, two, three. Yeah, that's not no. In Sefer Yirmiyahu you will find many Kri Uktiv. I didn't study the Kri's Uktiv, and I'm just going to plead the fifth on this. I don't know. Yeah, but I didn't study them. If during the course of the week I have time and I can come up with a great shot on every Korean Kativ, I will share it with you. Huh? There are words that are written one way, spelled one way in the text, and then at the bottom, the text tells you how to read it. That's what Kri, how you read, Kativ, how it's spelled. Kativ is spelling, Kri is reading. I'm sure there must be shot, but... I don't know. All right, listen, maybe we'll try and work it out. All right, I still have things that are on the agenda. We're not leaving yet. No, we're starting Nehemiah. I'm sorry. We're going to go into Nehemiah. There's a few minutes. Just hang in. Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia. Huh? Oh, good. No, I know exactly what I have to complete yet, and everything that we have to complete is going to be done. Yes, Hashem, gesundheit. Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia, vayihi b'chodesh Kislev. Shnas Ezrim, and as I said, Rashi, the first Rashi here says, Mikam ve'elech katav Nehemiah sefer zeh. From here on and further, Nehemiah wrote this sefer. It's all one sefer. Ezra and Nehemiah together, according to the Masorah, are sefer Ezra. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Chachalya, Vayihi b'chodesh, Kislev, Shnas Ezrim. By the way, let me just tell you in advance that most probably the most significant and important parallels between our days, mamish our days, the parallels are most with Sefer Nehemiah. We've shown many parallels in Ezra, and we're going to review them all, but in Sefer Nehemiah they are going to be fascinating. I may even be able to take you through Psukim where you feel the Pasuk is today's Jerusalem Post. That's what we're going to see. Vayihi b'chodesh Kislev, I mean, I know that's a big promise, so you're just going to have to sit back and wait. Vayihi b'chodesh Kislev, it was in the month of Kislev, Shnas Esrim, in the 20th year of Artachshasta, Bani Hayiti b'Shushan Habira. I was in Shushan Habira. Now, where's the letter? The letter of Ezra. Ezra came in the 8th year, I believe, of Artachshasta. All right, we'll find that buzzer. But all right, here it's the 12 years later. It's the 20th year, and I was in Shushan Abira. Vayavu Hanani Echad Meyachai. When he says okay, one of my brothers, he means this is a real brother, a blood brother to Nehemiah. Hanani, one of my brothers, came. Hu Vanoshim Yehuda, he and people from Yehuda. And I asked them, Al HaYehudim HaPleita Asher Nisharu Min HaShevi V'al Yerushalayim. I asked them about the Jews who remain, who are there, the refugees. You know who he refers to as refugees here? The refugees are those who have left Bavel. Refugees from Bavel. From the exile of Bavel. That's right. They're the Bnei HaGola. They are the refugees.
And
those who went to Eretz Yisrael. That's what they're called. In other words, even the Jew who is living in Chutz Laaretz sees them as the remnant. They're the ones who made it out of the Golos, and they're called the remnant. And he wants to know about Yerushalayim. Vayom Ruli, they said to me, let me say the following. Sefer Ezra really deals with the construction of the Bet HaMikdash. Sefer Nehemiah is going to deal with the construction of the walls of Yerushalayim. And in a sense, I would say that the personalities of Ezra and Nehemiah, and what they saw as being their tafkid, their responsibility, Ezra is the great man of the spirit, the Godel B'Yisrael, the Moshe Rabbeinu, the Kohen. And his job is finally to complete the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. He is to the one who has to set the spiritual foundations of the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. And he has therefore been given permission by Artachshasta to paskin and to judge, and he's given autonomy in religious matters. As we have said, there is no sovereignty. There is no sovereignty politically. That's not going to happen for another 150 years or 100 years. But Ezra is the man of the spirit. Nehemiah is going to be the Bonei Yerushalayim. He's going to build and strengthen the walls. In other words, if the construction of Klal Yisrael takes place in two stages, there is the spiritual and there is the physical. Ezra is the spiritual, Nehemiah is the physical. What's interesting over here is that it comes in that order. How are we to view it in terms of our days? So I'll tell you, I always wonder about that. In one sense, the spiritual foundations of the Yishuv came first, at the end of the 18th century, before
before secular Zionists thought of coming to Eretz Yisrael, the Talmidim, the students of the Vilna Gaon, and the students of the Baal Shem, were the ones that came here and established the communities. We established Yerushalayim, established Tzfat. They were the ones that went out and made, from the next generation, were those who went and built Petach Tikva and other, you know, the real foundations, in other words, the real history of the of modern Eretz Yisrael does not begin with Herzl, doesn't begin with the second Aliyah or the third Aliyah or the Ma'apilim or Ben Gurion, and I have a great deal of respect for all of these people. I must probably be shot for having said that, but no, the fact is that they had great tremendous inspiration. They were the instruments, God's instrument to establish a Jewish community here in Eretz Yisrael. But what really brought Eretz Yisrael to the consciousness of Jews in Eastern Europe, who ultimately that's where Zionism thrived. Zionism didn't thrive in a Germany that was already under reform, on the influence of reform. There was very little Zionism in Germany. There was far less Zionism in France. Well, I think in France most probably it was dangerous to be a Zionist. For that matter, it was dangerous to be a Jew. France was also a highly on the way to be assimilated Jewish community. But there was already a yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael. That yeshuv were the students of the Vilna Gaon and the students of the Baal Shem. So in that sense, the foundations, the spiritual foundations came first. But when we talk about the masses of people that we have now, there's a reverse situation taking place, that the country is established physically, though spiritually the truth is, if you want to look at it carefully, it's not far behind. It's just that the religious community has not yet been able to influence the non-religious community in any great numbers. But here it was the spiritual came before the physical. And as we talked yet in one of the first shiurim on Ezra, Rav Soloveitchik talks about the idea that Ezra, when he came from the Golah, he came straight to Yerushalayim, and from Yerushalayim they built outward. Building outward from Yerushalayim means taking the spirituality of Yerushalayim and bringing that, like the spokes of a wheel, outward. Nehemiah wants to know about Yerushalayim. Vayomru li, Pasuk Gimel. Vayomru li hanisharim, those who remain. Vayomru li, they said, those who have remained and are there, Bamedina. By the way, in Nehemiah, we're going to see in other places, Medina always refers to Eretz Yisrael. Understand, when it says Medina, it means Eretz Yisrael. Berah Gedola, the terrible, terrible evil has come upon them, ubecherpa, great shame. Vechomat Yerushalayim, meforatzet, the wall of Yerushalayim is breached, it's broken, and her gates have been consumed by fire. The walls of the city are a churban. And in this pasuk, we're going to see most probably one of the most salient and important features of Nehemiah. When I heard these things, your shafti for evke, I sat down and I cried. Nehemiah is all heart. He is emotion. He's capable of being, and you know what you're going to see right away. He is one of the people closest to our Tachshasta. Most probably since the days of Yosef, nobody has come that close to Balchus. And here he is, surrounded by the opulence of Shushan HaBira. You may remember a shiur that I said on the Megillah, where I pointed out that there were two parts to the city of Shushan. One was the city of Shushan, and then there was the royal compound, which was called Shushan HaBira, the seat of government, the Kiryah. And it was separated from the city of Shushan by a river or by a moat, which means there may have been a lot of Jews in Shushan. There weren't too many Jews in Shushan HaBira. To make your way into Shushan HaBira, you had to be big. Ish Yehudi Hoya Bishushan Habira Ushmo Mordechai Ben Yor. There was one Jew in Shushan Habira, one too many Jews walking around Shushan Habira. That means this fellow, Nehemiah, has made it to the top. He's at the seat of government. And when he hears the report from Yerushalayim, I sat and I cried, Ve'et Ablo Yomim, and I was in mourning for days. Ve'et Som Umit Palil, and I fasted and I prayed, Lifnei Lekeashmai, before the God of Heaven, Ve'omar, and I said, this is the first of the prayers of Nehemiah. There are going to be a number of prayers. He's all heart. He's all heart. Ona Hashem Elokei Hashemayim, please God, the God of the heavens, Hakel HaGadol V'Hanora, he's going to refer to God a number of times as the God who is great and fearsome, does not refer to him as Gibor. We talked about it before, we'll talk about it again in Yitzhak Hashem. Shomer HaBriz V'Chesed La'o'ava V'L'Shomerim Yitzhotav, the one who keeps and watches the covenant of kindness to those who love him and those who keep his mitzvahs. Tihino oz necha kashedet veinecha p'tuchot l'shmoel tfilat avdecha asher anochi mitpalel l'ponecha hayom yom avalayla al b'nei Yisrael avadecha u'misvade al chatoz b'nei Yisrael asher tonu loch aniu beis ovi chaton. What a pasuk. Let your ears be attuned and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I pray before you today, and I pray before you day and night about the children of Israel, your servants, and I confess the sins of the children of Israel, that they sinned before you, and I and my family, I and my father's house have sinned. Chavol chaval nulach. We have acted destructively toward you. V'lo shamanu et ha-mitzvot, we didn't keep the mitzvot, v'tachukim, v'tamishpatim, and the statutes and the laws, asher tzivita et Moshe avdecha, that you commanded Moshe your servant. Zechorna et ha-tovah, please remember that asher tzivita et Moshe avdecha, that you commanded your servant Moshe, saying, atem tim'alu, you know, he's saying, listen, Rebbein Shem, I know what you, we know what you said in Torah, atem tim'alu, you're going to sin, and ni'ofitz etchem ba'amim, I'm going to disperse you amongst the nations of the world, and you kept your word. Shafta Melai, but you, when you will return to me, Ushmata Mitzvotai, you will keep my commands, Vasidmotam, you will do them. Then you promised us, and this is in Parshat Nitzavim, if you are dispersed, I'm going to be at the very ends of the heaven. From there I will gather them in. I will bring them to the place that I have chosen, that my name should be there. My name should dwell there. Now is the time to bring us back and remember, these are your servants, they're your people, that you redeemed with your great strength, your strong arm. Honor Hashem, to him, please, let your ears be attuned to the prayer of your servant and to the prayers of your servants that want to fear your name, and bring success to your servant today. Utnehu l'rachamin l'fnei ha'ish hazeh. And give me mercy that before this man, he means the king. And now the chapter ends after he says his tefillin. He says, "Vani hayiti mashgel ha-melech." I was the butler of the king. Very good question. You'll see that most of Nehemiah is going to be much, much easier in terms of the Hebrew. I don't know the answer. It troubles me. By the way, I think that's another one of the reasons why Rashi said at the beginning that from here to the end, Nehemiah wrote it. Because, you know, along is going to come some scholar at the Hebrew University 2,000 years later, 2,500 years later, and he's going to get himself a doctorate by showing the differences in style between the first 10 chapters of Ezra and the last 13 chapters of Ezra. And therefore he's going to have to say, well, there were two Ezras. And Masali will find a coin someplace or some kind of shard of broken. This was from the time of Ezra 1 and this from the time of Ezra 2. So therefore, along comes Rashi and he takes care of it immediately. He says, you should know that from here and further was written by Nehemiah. Is it possible, and I'm only theorizing now, Nehemiah was a man of the people. Ezra was Muram Me'am. Nehemiah was one of the people. You have no idea, in Yiddish they would say that Nehemiah is going to speak to the Zach. He's going to be direct, he's going to be forthright, he's going to be simple, because that is the
character and the personality of Nehemiah. And he's going to be an extremely emotional individual at the same time that he's hard, tough as nails. He's going to be very tough. And I'll have to find who I'm going to compare him to, whether I'll compare him to Shamir or to Netanyahu. It will depend on what's in the papers then. He's going to be tough. He's going to be tough. He will not bend before pressures, and they're going to be awesome pressures. He's going to be frightened out of his wits. And you know who's going to do most of the frightening? His fellow Jews. That's going to be the painful part of the Nehemiah. Can remain tough. But I think maybe that could be the difference why the style is much easier. It's clear. It's on the Kamat Modern Hebrew. He's writing this part. He's writing it all in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know. It could be he ends up by having to return at one point to Shushan Avira. But no, I think he's just more a man of the people. Ezra is the great tzaddik. He's the great law. If you know what I would say? Ezra is Moshe. Nehemiah is Aaron. I don't know too much about Jabotinsky. I don't know too much about all the guys on the streets around here. But Jabotinsky I know a little bit. I don't know what... Yeah, what? Ah, you're talking about the great essay of Cohen and Navi. Maybe I'll read it again and see if there are any parallels to it. But certainly Ezra and Nehemiah are different personalities. They're going to accomplish different things. And Klal Yisrael needs its Ezra and needs its Nehemiah, just as it needs its Moshe and needs its Aaron. Now I know what you're talking about. I should have thought of that immediately. Okay. All right.